today on Off Mic? Well, it's here, Gary's new $325 million Hard Rock Casino. We'll hear some of the sights and sounds of opening day just a week ago and discuss if a future Chicago casino is a real threat. And we bid a fond farewell to two of our production interns who will be graduating from college this weekend. All this on Off Mic. Welcome to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente, reporter with WBEZ Chicago. Well, last week, I know you had to endure an encore show because, well, I was out having a blast, I'm not going to lie, at the new Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana in Gary, the new $325 million casino at Burr and Interstate 8094, opened to the public last Friday, and they did it to much fanfare, with two dozen celebrity guests doing a guitar smash. So buckle in your seat and enjoy this audio tour of Northwest Indiana's newest entertainment destination.
Oh, I feel it. 100,000 square feet of entertainment and excitement, 1,600 slot machines, 80 tables, over 2,100 gaming positions, and not just that, a 2,000-seat Hard Rock Live performance venue. Now, we're going to have the iconic smashing of our guitars right up here, and that's going to signify the opening of this amazing Hard Rock right here in Northern Indiana, Chicagoland. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a countdown. When I go from one, I'm going to say smash. When I say smash, you're going to smash those guitars. Are you guys ready? Crowd, are you ready to help me count down? Here we go. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, smash! Ladies and gentlemen, make some noise!
I first had a chance to speak to Gary, Indiana Mayor Jerome Prince.
Well, there's a lot to say. I mean, clearly, I'm excited, and as demonstrated by here, there's just electric excitement, not only in the city of Gary, but across the region, the state. And man, I'd go as far as to say, I guarantee you that people across the world are recognizing and certainly acknowledging and are just as excited about today.
You know, I did a story earlier and I asked the people this, but I'll ask you this. What makes you feel this is going to be just part and parcel different than your experience with the two gambling boats?
Yeah, I've heard you ask that question before, and I think it's an appropriate question considering that we've had casinos for 20 years now. I think what makes this different is the brand, right? And without question, the location. And the fact that a company who has the reputation and the stature of a Hard Rock and the brand, right, has taken a what some would consider to be a chance, a gamble, no pun intended, on the city of Gary makes people take a second look. And I think that within itself is going to be the catalyst to future investment.
That's right. And, you know, I know for the longest time, Gary's wanted a Jackson Museum. There's so many artifacts in there, it almost takes the place of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of artifacts in there, but over the last couple of months, I've heard that a lot of folks around the city of Gary actually have their own artifacts, in addition to the ones that the family maintains. And what's most important about that is that they absolutely have an interest in establishing the same. And so we're just looking for great things to happen. And again, today, I believe, is the beginning of all of that.
Up next, Gary City Council member Ron Brewer.
How do you feel about this day?
Well, I think today is a very great day for the city of Gary. This is something that, as it was stated earlier, that Senator Erlen Rogers been pushing for land base before we got the riverboat. She was pushing for land base. And to see us get to this moment from just a couple of years ago that myself, Senator Melton, Senator Rogers, and former mayor Karen Freeman Wilson, who's not here today, but she definitely
should get some recognition.
Absolutely.
She took all those hard questions down at the State House.
She took a lot of hard questions from her getting up, getting in the vehicle 3 o'clock in the morning to make sure she was there for 7:30 or 8 o'clock hearings and things of that nature there. Coming back, still trying to run this city here. She did a lot of heavy lifting, and she should be recognized.
Also getting a chance to speak were Marlon and Tito Jackson of Gary's most famous family, the Jackson Five. Marlon speaks first.
I tell you guys what, it feels so great to be back home again and just feel the support of the people around Gary, Indiana, the camaraderie, and to thank the Hot Rock Hotel for being the first to take a step and see Gary's vision and want to be a part of it, hiring jobs. This created so many jobs, which will affect Gary, as they all say. So Gary, a diamond in the rough. You're getting ready to get polished, baby. And I thank everyone, I really do, because I feel great inside. And thank you, you know, when you get inside, reminisce with us, because as I walk through there, you can't help but start reminiscing back in the days when everybody understood and came together in harmony and peace. And that's what we want to bring back. So we thank you all.
I'd like to say thank you to all involved in the project of the Hard Rock. I'm proud of my city, Gary, Indiana. Like, we've recorded songs that mention the school and the street, songs like 2300 Jackson Street, or Going Back to Indiana, just to show how proud we are of this city of Gary, Indiana. Being raised here, starting our musical journey here, going to school here, everything about the Jackson Five and the Jackson family was rooted right here in Gary, Indiana. And I just like to say thank you for being a lovely city, and not in a negative way, but saying we're doing the moonwalk back to success. Thank you very much.
I forgot something I wanted to say. I wanted to thank the Gary administrative staff. Yesterday we were out at the house on 2300 Jackson Street, and they reveal signage that's going to go throughout Gary, Indiana, directing people to the 2300 Jackson Street, to the Hot Rock. And I just want to say thank you guys, you know, because now, to my understanding, you're working on passing a bill making the 2300 Jackson Street a historical site. Yes, and what that's going to do, that's going to generate tourism and all that traffic that's going to start coming through Gary, Indiana. Like I said, I think the Hot Rock, it's going to start turning over in Gary, Indiana, too. So get ready for good times, Gary, because you got a great team, and they have a vision. So stick with them so it can happen. Thank you.
Marlon and Tito weren't the only famous Gary natives to speak. I had a chance to speak to a teenage favorite singer of mine, the one and only Denise Williams. And maybe he don't dress fine, but I don't really mind. I interviewed Denise Williams inside the High Rollers Lounge inside the glitzy and flashy new Hard Rock Casino.
How do you feel today?
I feel great. I mean, this is a great, great day to be here and a great occasion. So, yeah, I'm charged. I'm charged up.
And you're originally from Gary, right?
I was born and raised here. I went to school here, graduated from Tolleson High School, went to Purdue University. So I'm native Gary, Indiana.
How far from this location did you grow up?
I think probably my home is probably about 10 minutes from here. I grew up in an area called Tarrytown.
Okay.
And so it's not too far from here at all. Yeah.
And did you ever think something, I mean, obviously Gary has had casino gaming now for 25 years, but this seems like on another scale.
This is another scale. I mean, when I walked in, it's breathtaking to see what they've done here. And even as you drive up and you see the facility, I said, oh my God, it has just been so incredible to see what's happening here in my hometown. And for so many years, I've prayed for this, you know. There's got to be something that'll come in and take the city up, because when I grew up in Gary, Indiana, it was wonderful. I had a wonderful childhood, wonderful teenage years here. So to see this happening now, oh, it's not the tears of sadness that I've had on a couple occasions. I came here, I saw it, and there are tears of joy.
You know, I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, but where did you come up with your beautiful voice?
I copied my mom. I used to hear my mom in the shower. She wouldn't sing in public. I copied my mom, and my mom would say, "Oh," and I'd stand out there and I'd try to copy that, and just listening to the flow of her voice. So, and then I also grew up listening to Nancy Wilson. I wanted to sound just like Nancy Wilson and look like her. And, you know, Dionne Warwick. So I think I'm a combination of a lot of people, but in my own unique interpretation of what that is.
And how did you feel those first few years hearing your hits on the radio?
I couldn't believe it. The very first time I heard my first single, Free, on the radio, I was driving. And down the freeway, I had to pull over to the side. I was crying so hard that I had to pull over because, you know, I never ever saw myself in the entertainment business. I wanted to be a nurse. My mom was a nurse's aide. I was the first black candy striper at a hospital, osteopathic hospital in Chicago where my mom worked. And so I never saw myself in entertainment, and especially because I grew up in a very strict religious home, and mm-hmm. and you didn't sing the devil's music, you know. So that was a no-no. You were going to be on the weenie roast in hell, and I was trying to stay out of there. So anyway, it's just been incredible, and I know that it was God, you know, saying, you know, this is your plan for your life, but this is what I want you to do, because I gave you this voice, and so this is what you have to do. And it's been extraordinary. All the people that I've met, singing with Johnny Mathis.
One of my favorite songs.
Oh, I told John when we finally got in the studio, I said, I've been singing along with you since I was 12 years old, so I'm ready. I said, when you did Merv Griffin or the Dinosaur Show or Johnny Carson, I said, I sang with you, so let's go. And we had tremendous success. So it's just been wonderful.
You have so many just quintessential great pop music. Where's Denise Williams now? How is your life now?
Oh, my life is incredible, and I have had tremendous success in pop music and gospel Christian music and R&B music, and I am now going into the studio to do a jazz project with Thelonious Monk. He's producing my new jazz project, and I am so thrilled with that because you know, I also am co-producing a theater piece called Live at the Crescendo Club, starring Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, and Pearl Bailey. And we're hoping to be out with our theater piece next year in 2022. And I'm going to be doing the role of Sarah Vaughan. And so I've wanted to do this music, and I've not done it. And now to be approached by Thelonious Monk, you know, one of the top incredible musicians in the jazz world, to do this project. I'm just so excited.
And when should we expect that?
I think it'll probably be out the end of this year. That's our goal.
And I tell you what, I'm so glad I got to meet you at this age, because I'm not sure if 15-year-old Michael Puente could have handled it.
Well, it is so good, and I wish you continued success in your career, and, you know, that is fun, because we work very hard at what we do, but we also want to enjoy it and have fun, and I'm still having fun.
When you walk through the casino, you see memorabilia of dozens of entertainers, from the Jacksons to Prince to Katy Perry, Billie Eilish, Aretha Franklin, Eddie Van Halen, Beyonce, just so many. And the person who puts that together is a man named Giovanni.
Giovanni Talaferro.
All right. And Giovanni, so you're the person here that comes up with a lot of the memorabilia inside the actual casino.
That's correct. I am the director of memorabilia design, and it's my role to oversee the design and installation of all of our artifacts around the world.
Where do you come up with, first of all, what do you know, what you're going to display, and how do you come up with it?
Through a lot of research. We want to research every market that we're entering and to make sure that we are providing a story that's relevant to that local market. Who are artists that are from that space? Who are artists that have some sort of historical importance to that space? Who has performed there? You know, things of that nature.
What are some of the unique items we will see here at this Hard Rock Casino in Northern Indiana?
You're going to see a very impressive and vast variants of types of items. You're going to see items representing the Jackson family, like Joseph's 1961 guitar that started everything. We also have Michael's polo shirt from when he was 7 years old that was hand-stitched by Catherine Jackson, you know, from the very first group photo, you know, before the talent show at Roosevelt High School. You're going to see items from other Gary locals, such as Denise Williams from Let's Hear It for the Boy music video, a dress that she wore. Crystal Talaferro, you know, legendary side woman with Mellencamp, Billy Joel, Kim Mazzell, First Lady of House Music, the Kinsey Report. And, you know, so Gary is very well represented, as well as Chicagoland. You know, we got a lot of artists from Chicago, from Fall Out Boy, OK Go, Cheap Trick, you know, REO Speedwagon, and many others. And then also a vast grouping of artists from heritage all the way to contemporary. A lot of first-time artists will be displayed here. For example, Billie Eilish. She's never been represented on Hard Rock property before. This will be the first place.
Here?
That, yeah, here.
And Gary?
And Gary.
Billie Eilish.
Billie Eilish. We have her red coat. And an interesting interconnection there is that she covered Bad by Michael Jackson. So, you know, we tried to figure out how can we relate one to another, kind of like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, right? At Post Malone, we have an artifact of his here, Tupac Shakur from the Gridlock film. You know, we have, you know, Sheryl Crow, Diana Ross, Stevie Wonder, Billy Joel, Kenny Aronoff, John Mellencamp, Axl Rose, a large dedication to Indiana in general. So, you know, it's an extremely impressive collection. No matter where we go around the world, again, we look for world music. BTS is one artist that, you know, we're looking to get things from and, you know, for display in the future, especially the whole K-pop scene and K-pop, J-pop, and all the varieties, you know, because we have markets in Japan, we have markets in Korea, we have markets all around the world, and BTS right now, I mean, they're one of the biggest things out there.
We've heard of Hard Rock before. Hard Rock has a large following. This place just seems amazing.
Thank you.
Has it turned out even better than what you even anticipated?
I think the answer to that is yes, but with a little asterisk there. We have high expectations. High expectations about our quality. We know what we're doing. Well, you know, we only do 5-star quality finishes, interiors. We dedicate every Hard Rock Casino or branded entity to be a top-notch entertainment destination. And so the live music venue, when we're able to have live concerts again, you know, that's going to have 2,000 plus seating capacity, you know, flex space where we can do sporting events, so it's going to be a space that everyone will be able to come in, enjoy, have a great time, eat some amazing food, and leave happy.
Well, Giovanni, thank you so much, and good luck with everything.
My pleasure.
I also got a chance to sit down and talk a little with the man who heads this new casino for Hard Rock, Matt Shuford.
So today's day one, well, for us anyway, but for you, this has been a long time in the planning. How are you feeling about this grand opening?
I couldn't be more excited. Things are going so well. We are so happy with not only the product, we're happy, so excited for our team who's done just an amazing amount of work to get us where we're here today. They're excited, we're excited. We had a private VIP event last night, and overwhelmingly, the feedback was extremely positive, but feeling really good and very excited to get the doors open.
again, I think I asked you this before. How do you see Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana being different than what else already out there, and even what's already out there in the Chicagoland area?
So first and foremost, the first only true land-based casino product in the Chicagoland market. You look at the finishes and the amount of quality and workmanship that has been put into the property. Arguably, there's nothing in this market that can match that. But you know, one of the things I think when you think of the Hard Rock brand, it just represents so many things. But it represents, you know, quality fun, music, memorabilia, people just having a great time. And it's really important to me and my team that we build that, you know, we back that up from a guest service perspective. So we're going to distinguish ourselves from a service side of things. And when people come here, they're going to, you know, when they make their next choice to go visit a casino or go visit a great restaurant, we want to be that choice.
And in terms of what people can, you know, casino goers, what can they find here? What are some of the amenities that you think is going to draw people in?
Well, of our close to 1,600 slots, about 1,300 of them are brand new. They're new, best in market, the newest product available. We have 80 table games really in different great locations around the property. We've got some great restaurants and other things on the non-gaming side as well. The Hard Rock brand started nearly 50 years ago with the Hard Rock Cafe, and that's kind of the center of our facility, kind of the showpiece with that Hard Rock Center Bar being surrounded by the Hard Rock Cafe. And then, from an entertainment perspective, we have three stages. Two of them are in, one's in the Hard Rock Cafe, one's in one of our lounges. But when the time is right, from a pandemic perspective, to do indoor large-scale entertainment, we have Hard Rock Live, which will seat close to 1,900 people, and we're very excited to get entertainment of a larger and more popular scale in there when the time is right from a safe and safety perspective.
Speaking of the pandemic, do you feel in any way that the pandemic will hamper, alter attendance or your success here, at least in the early run?
I think things are opening up across the country, and a lot of folks have been inside for a long time or been staying at home for a long time and haven't been able to get out, and we're starting to definitely see that individuals are coming out and they want to have fun. And for a lot of adults, casino gaming is their form of entertainment. I think we're opening at least at the right time from a pandemic perspective, as we all hope we're getting to near the end of this. We still operate under a number of restrictions as we look to ensure that our guests and our team members are safe first and foremost as they come and enjoy our amenities. So ideally, we'd love to have every slot machine in service, but as of right now, we're going to have every other. And we're only going to have a portion of our table game spots available, separated by plexiglass. We want our team members, we want our guests to be safe. And there will come the day where we will operate again as a full-fledged casino, every machine open, every table game spot open. But until that time, we feel very comfortable with the model that we have built and putting safety of our guests and team members first and foremost.
Matt, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. All right. Have a great day. Appreciate you being here.
All right.
When we come back, a conversation with a gaming expert on the competition Hard Rock Casino will face in the marketplace. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lake Shore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. We just gave you an audio tour of the new Hard Rock Casino Northern Indiana in Gary. It took 16 months to build and is finally open. But there's a lot of competition near and far. Joining me to talk about all that competition is Ed Feigenbaum, who covers gaming for Indiana Gaming Insight. If you can remember, what was the atmosphere like in Indiana 26 years ago as this new revenue concept of riverboat gaming came to Indiana and came to Gary?
Well, there was great excitement, and Gary was given the special privilege, which it kind of was unable to avail itself of being the first boat or first set of boats in the water. They were supposed to be first in the licensing process, but they kind of squandered things through a combination of missteps by then Mayor Barnes of Gary, and then by the city council to a certain extent in the application process. And then ultimately by Don Barden and Donald Trump and their arguments about where the casino would go, who would pay for it, and how much each should invest at any given point. But the people of Northwest Indiana, the people of Chicagoland, We're extremely excited about the ability to have a new set of options in Northwest Indiana. And I think when Donald Trump came in, there was also a particular excitement there about the Trump brand. You know, he represented something a whole lot different, you know, 25, 27 years ago than he does today.
And back then too, it was there wasn't as much competition as there is today. You even said the market wasn't as mature as it is today.
Right, and I think one thing that you could compare that to, you know, that listeners might kind of understand a little bit better would be the sports wagering markets. And here, you know, in late 2019, when Indiana opened up sports wagering, there was a great deal of excitement about that. There was a real groundswell. We saw a lot of people jump into the retail sports books as soon as they opened. You saw, you know, some of the Bears players and Blackhawks players and former Major League Baseball players show up at the openings and generate a little bit more excitement as well. And Illinois did not have sports wagering at the time. So the people of Illinois also came over to partake in that because they couldn't do it either online or in person at brick and mortar sports books. So the same kind of excitement and the same kind of lack of competition. You know, Michigan didn't have sports wagering until just about 2 months ago. And, you know, back then, Michigan didn't have any kind of casino gaming, you know, in the southwest corner of the state. And as a result, Indiana prospered from that.
And right now, is in terms of with Gary and the casinos, with the competition, it isn't just competition, say, from Chicago, but it's you've got the Horseshoe, you've got five casinos in Lake County or Northwest Indiana all by itself. Then you factor in what Chicago may or may not do. How saturated is this casino industry becoming in the Midwest?
Sure. And then you also have the Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan, the Four Winds Casino in South Bend, which is going to full Class 3 gaming, just like the other casinos in Northwest Indiana. So that will be additional competition as well. But Hard Rock is going to put in a very strong competitive product. And they're investing a great deal of money. They're sparing no expense. They've got a great brand and a great reputation, and they're doing something a little bit different. They've got a different kind of offering, I think, than some of the other Northwest Indiana casinos, which some might even say, well, you know, you've gotten accustomed to it. They've gotten a little bit stale. And you certainly saw that with Majestic Star in its last couple of years, you know, when there was no impetus to invest additional money in those two gaming vessels. And they started to look a little bit, I don't want to say run down, but they weren't quite the caliber of a new $325 million casino like you're going to see at the Burr Street exit on I-80-94. It's really going to be a different kind of experience, and the Hard Rock people just know how to market, and they're going to do a very good job of that. At the same time, you've got a mature market in Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland. The consumers know exactly what they can expect from the casinos, what they can demand from the casinos, what rewards they're going to get from the casinos through the different player loyalty club programs. And it's not like you've got a brand new casino coming in and dealing with a bunch of rubes. You know, Hard Rock's going to have to understand that they have a sophisticated market to appeal to. And Hard Rock and the other Northwest Indiana properties also have to understand that there's a great deal of uncertainty in the market, both with the question of what's going to happen with the Chicago casino or a potential Chicago casino, as well as a Southland potential casino. And then, you know, what's going to happen with the rest of the market? You've got talk that Arlington Park may end up being closed by Churchill Downs Inc. and perhaps even become the new Bears Stadium. You've got Horseshoe Casino Hammond up for sale. They were supposed to have been, or that property was supposed to have been sold last December, but now they've gotten a year's reprieve. And part of the reason for that was because the Gaming Commission understood that with all the uncertainty in the market, with the question of what's going to happen in Chicago, what's going to happen with the opening of the new land-based casino in Gary, that it wasn't fair to the company to make them sell off immediately. So that we don't know who's going to operate that casino starting in perhaps 2022. And as a result, you could have one of the big names in the industry come in and kind of try to capture some more market share away from both the Ameristar and the new Hard Rock, or you could just have somebody coming in and buying on the cheap, saying, okay, well, we're willing to take the chance, take the flyer that if we can get this for less than Horseshoe invested in this property, then we can still make a go of it, even if the competition is ridiculously strong. That kind of philosophy, helped the folks that bought the casino in Rising Sun. That had been a property that had been owned by Chicago-based Hyatt Gaming Management, and they invested close to $200 million in that property. They sold it for between $40 and $50 million, knowing what the competition was going to do to it from Cincinnati, and they were right. But Full House came in and bought it at such a low price that it's okay for it to be getting revenues in the neighborhood of $4 million a month instead of the 15 to 18 million that Hyatt had been bringing in back in the day.
I was in conversation with a friend of mine that what's happening with casino or gaming is somewhat similar to what's happening in retail. So many people are buying online now, Amazon, that a lot of people are not going to brick and mortar stores. And we know brick and mortar stores have been shutting down because it's tough for people to get off their couch and want to shop at a facility as opposed to Amazon. And I think something similar is happening within the gaming industry as well.
Absolutely. And we've seen that with the transformation of sports wagering from what we had in September of 2019, when we could only have the retail sports books in Indiana, to the change to mobile. Now mobile is taking about 88% of the sports wagering handle here in Indiana every month, and it's increasing by a very small incremental amount, maybe less than a half a percent a month, but it has not trended down in any month since it opened up. And again, you're seeing all these smaller operators get into the business, in addition to FanDuel and DraftKings and Barstool, which will open up this month. But you're seeing the smaller operators get in because even a 1 or 2% market share is still a considerable amount of money, given the lack of need for huge capital investment. They've already made the investment in other states in developing their app, and it's just a matter of modifying things very slightly to conform with Indiana regulations.
I've been asking a number of folks in Gary about what is different about this time around now with the Hard Rock Casino, because Gary's had gaming for 26 years, and by all accounts, it's really hard to see where any of that investment has gone. Obviously, they have issues with their budget. They have issues with depopulation, disinvestment. So what was supposed to be money for capital projects have gone to shore up their general fund, so you don't really see that. But they say also with Hard Rock, there seems to be a renewed commitment to the community, to getting the community involved. I know they've had vendor fairs to get just regular, everyday Gary folks to possibly do business with the new Hard Rock Casino. Do you anticipate maybe this is a new chapter, a new beginning for Gary it's not going to be a panacea, it's not going to fix everything in Gary, but maybe this chapter might be a little bit better for the city?
Well, every decision that was made about the money, Mike, was really made consciously by the city of Gary, and you can't blame the casinos for that. The city administration, with the consent of the city council in many cases, simply changed some of that capital investment. We're supposed to see the old Sheraton come down and be replaced with a brand new, beautiful new downtown hotel. We're supposed to see improvements to the Genesis Convention Center. We're supposed to see a renovation of Union Station. And those were initial priorities of the Barnes administration. But as time went by, the the King administration, the Clay administration, the Freeman Wilson administration, and now the Prince administration had different priorities, and they have different priorities for different reasons. And you can probably say that they best suited the times. And, you know, it's doubtful that much of the gaming revenues were actually wasted. And you also have to ask yourself, you know, what things would have been like without the additional infusion of those funds into the operating budget. You know, you've got all kinds of new or newer police cars for the Gary Police Department. The police department was in real tough shape, you know, before gaming, and just the ability to get new equipment for them and for the fire department was critical. And those are the kinds of things I think that people forget over the years, just like, you know, people don't really think about the Hoosier Lottery as providing all this funding for not only teacher and firefighter pensions, but also for, you know, 50% essentially of your excise tax on your automobile license plates. You know, that used to be the most hated tax in Indiana before the property tax was the most hated tax in Indiana. And we essentially got rid of that because of gaming. So people don't have a real long memory, but the money is there. The money's been going toward things that the local officials have decided are the best uses of the money. And I think you'll continue to see that going forward, but you'll also see more money. And, you know, you also have seen, or you've got more experience in what other communities have done with their money and how they've benefited and how, you know, capital projects are probably, you know, the way to go, one-time capital spending. You know, if you're not talking about sidewalks shortly before a city mayoral primary, for example. So it's not just Gary that's had some of those problems. But, you know, now with the federal COVID money and some of the related funds that are coming into communities, you know, they're being told to spend that on one-time capital projects, in essence. And I think that some of that mentality may also help in trying to decide where some of this additional, the incremental money that's going to come in from the Hard Rock revenues is going to go.
You know, one of my last questions is, Ed, is that we do know there was some consternation between the mayor of Hammond and some other communities when Gary was pushing for a land-based casino. It's here now. But should that be any surprise in that, you know, markets change, situations change, lawmakers are now more amenable to having a land-based casino? I guess it wouldn't be out of the question for the other licenses to consider upgrading maybe to a land-based situation off the lake. Should there be any animosity between the cities, or is this changing markets? Hammond can't really control what Chicago's going to do or Illinois. These companies just, they know they got to roll with the punches.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of that goes back to the law and the new compact that we have with the Pokagons, which essentially prohibits any land-based gaming off footprint for Ameristar or Horseshoe. So that's essentially off the table now, unless the legislature, unless the governor wants to abrogate the compact. And, you know, that's still an option. If there's going to be more revenue to be gained outside of the compact than within the compact, you know, as we heard in the legislative debate, that's certainly an option, but it's not the most favored option right now. As for the officials sticking up for their own cities and their casinos, you know, they are accountable first and foremost to their constituents and their cities. They also realize that they live within a county, within a region, within a state, and to a larger extent within a Midwest where everybody is interdependent. You know, you can't just say, for example, you're going to build a wall between, you know, Hammond and Illinois and expect that you're going to be able to thrive. Everybody has to understand that they give a little and get a little from everybody else, and the mayors certainly do, but their first priority is to protect their citizens in the way that they believe is best in their minds.
Ed, I can talk to you for the next 3 hours, but thank you so much for this.
Sounds good to me, Mike.
And that was Ed Feigenbaum of Indiana Gaming Insight. And we'll be back with more Off Mic. Welcome back to Off Mic on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Michael Puente. You know, since January, I've had the help of putting together this show from two production interns, Stephanie Daniels and Andrea Doty. They are both students at Calumet College of St. Joseph in Whiting. And this Saturday, they both will be graduating. And they both have just done an outstanding job putting together segments and even doing interviews on Off Mic. I thought it would be a great time to have them interview each other about their experience in college and what do they expect in the future. So here you go.
Hi, Andrea.
Hey, Stephanie. Thanks.
What did you major in?
Well, I started in 2012 as a transfer student from IUN in Gary, and I kept my major as elementary education. And after studying that a little bit longer at Calumet College, I ended up having like this moment where I just switched. And my minor was actually language arts. And so I just loved writing so much. I transferred from the elementary education department to just the English department, and I've been loving it.
That's great. Speaking of loving the experience, what are some things that you love about Calumet College? What are some of the highs in your time of being here?
Well, I personally think that I gravitated mostly towards the smaller atmosphere, and I think that was part of the reason why I transferred from IUN to Calumet College, because I went from the bigger school to a smaller school where I knew the professors better, and not only that, I knew everybody in my classes better.
I understand it. I like the smaller classes as well, so that was definitely a choosing factor for me. What changes would you make to your college or university if you were to make changes?
I may have studied a little bit harder, and then maybe that would have helped me finish faster, and I wouldn't have had to change from the full-time student to a part-time student. But you know what? Honestly, looking back, I don't know. I've always thought about that, but I don't think realistically I would change anything, but if I would, that would be it.
What are your plans after graduation?
That's the million-dollar question. basically, I would just love to do anything where I could be a part of a creative team. And I love to write. So if I could write with the job, I mean, that would be just like butter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was school for you this year, last year, with the transition from COVID? How was it different for you? Was it an easy process to handle?
Well, you see, I was going to school before COVID hit. And so I was used to going to the school and having my classes, and seeing my classmates, and, you know, sitting in the cafe on the second floor, which I just, you know, love to get my little table and just either study or read a book and or listen to music. And this year, I haven't done that. And I think I missed that. And I even missed going to my favorite coffee shops up on 119th Street. Mm-hmm. And, yeah.
That's not the only change for you.
I've been at home, and basically my classmate has been my dog, who's been at my feet as I type away.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. We're going to switch it around and reverse the roles because me and Andrea are both student interns here. So she's going to ask away now.
Hi, I'm Andrea. I am a student intern here for Off Mic, and I am talking to Stephanie Daniels about graduating and finishing up school. Hey, Stephanie, how are you? Would you like to tell us something about yourself?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm a criminal justice and English major, so I double majored. I started in 2013. What led to that double major is like always a giant question for people. Like, how did you pick those two? And pretty much I knew criminal justice was something that I loved from the beginning, like childhood memories watching TV, like watching like the Law and Order TV shows or any shows with like judges and stuff, and seeing like the lawyers work and defend people was something that I loved to see and was passionate about. And I was like, I want to be that helping hand, you know? I want to be that person to, you know, defend people, to, you know, if you don't have it, to stand up for yourself, like, I'll be the person that goes to fight for you. So that's where the criminal justice came in, and I wanted to be a lawyer. When I came into the office, I met with Clarence, and he was like, okay, what are your plans? What are you looking to do? And I was like, well, I want to go to law school after college. That's the end-all goal. And he was like, well, double majoring would be a good choice for you, just simply because if you pick up English, you'll have that background as far as the literature, understanding the text. It'll make it come easier for all the reading and writing that you will have to do in college. It'll prep you for it. And then the criminal justice background, you'll have the law aspect. So having the law aspect and the writing aspect hand in hand, I was like, I'm sold. Let's double major. It wasn't that hard to fit in the classes because all I had to do was like cut out some of my electives, which are just like free classes that float around, and use those for my English major. So I basically was taking core classes for basically all my years, and I minimized my elective classes by double majoring.
Wow, that's gotta be quite a feat.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing a double major, but here you are, you're doing it. And that's just amazing.
Thank you.
So what would you say would be your next step? What would your dream step be in this?
My like dream step, of course, would be to go to law school. I'm not going to law school though. That's the kicker. I don't want to go to school for another like 4 to 6 years, because that's typically like how long it takes to go to law school, just for my son. He's young, and I feel like I'd rather take my 2 degrees and run with them versus going to school to be a lawyer and miss out on those important times of his childhood. Going to school, like, I've played basically all the sports here at Calumet College. I've worked while going to school, while studying, like, being the all-around, like, super mom, the super student, the super worker. And it's like, I just want to be super mom now. I want to focus in on my son growing up. I want to focus in on being there for those moments. You know, he's been so understanding on why mommy's gone, or why mommy's at school, or why mommy's at the game. And I love it. But I want to be understanding to what he has going on now. So as much as I would like and love to go to law school, I'd pass it up any day for my son. So with that being out the picture, I think my new dream goal is to start a nonprofit for less fortunate children, to help them with whether it's finding housing or finding a way to get through their education. I'm not sure exactly how I want to mold it, but I do know that I do want to start off as far as housing for children that have less fortunate situations, because sometimes that foundation is what's going to define who you become in the future, or it can break you. And I don't want it to break these children. So I want to try to help as much as possible. And then that's why I said I want to add in the educational standpoint, because, you know, now that you have a stable home, you still need a stable learning environment. So I'm not sure how that will work, but that's what I want to do. And it's going to be like something unique and one of a kind, but that's my next goal in life.
Where do you see yourself in the next 5 to 10 years?
In the next 5 to 10 years, I want to have my nonprofit started and off the ground. If that has not happened, I would say that'd be more so close to the 10-year mark of having it off the ground, up and running like a well-oiled machine. At 5 years, I think we'll just be opening the doors up because I do want to put my foot out there and get some work in the field before I try to open it and just have it like crash and burn to the ground. So I don't mind putting in some legwork and like working with some nonprofit organizations, getting to see how everything runs, getting the ins and out, and then taking that step of like, okay, let's do this on my own. In 5 years, my son will be in high school. 10 years, he'll be on his way to college. So there'll be a lot of movement happening in the next 5 to 10 years.
Our thanks and congratulations and good luck to our two production interns from Calumet College of St. Joseph who will be graduating tomorrow, Stephanie Daniels and Andrea Doty. Well, that's all the time we have for this show. You can listen to it again as a podcast by going to lakeshorepublicradio.org. For me, Michael Puente, I hope you have a great and safe weekend.